once you experience being in this part, in these parts of the world, you realize how massive the resistance is to the gospel. And you go, how am I supposed to deal with this massive, massive resistance to the gospel? And when you visit these areas, if you have the opportunity to visit these areas in the presence or in the company of native missionaries, you can go, now I know what I need to do. I need to work with them.
I'm Joel Moss, and this is the Native Missions Podcast.
This is truly a refuge, and you can see it on the children's faces.
The most receptive people for the gospel would have been those people who were outcast.
Actually, shining a light on millions of people who have no hope at all.
Welcome back to the Native Missions Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Moss. I'm glad you joined me for this episode. Have you ever heard of something called the 1040 window? Do you know what it is, where to find it, or why it's even worth talking about? For Christians who believe that everyone needs to hear the gospel, the 1040 window is an essential concept. And my guest today is the perfect person to explain it to us and argue why every Christian needs at least a basic understanding of it. Eric Vess has been involved in missions for decades. He has traveled to Myanmar, Nepal, Uganda, Russia, and many other countries. He's currently a content contributor here at Advancing Native Missions. And if you're someone who wants to understand what God is doing in the world today, I'm sure you'll appreciate Eric's insight. Here's our conversation. Well, I want to welcome to the studio and the podcast, Eric Vess. Eric, we've hung out in a lot of different contexts, but it's been a while since you've been on the mic with me up here, but welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be up here in your studio and talking about the things that are really on my heart and that are important to me.
Well, you've have had a lot of roles over your, how many years at A&M now?
Well, let's see. We're looking at 12 years.
12. Currently, you know, your title says writer or content contributor or content creator.
That's right.
But that encapsulates a lot of roles. You've written over the past 4 or 5 years a couple articles on the 1040 window, which is our topic today. Why is the 1040 window important? One you wrote back in 2019, what is the 1040 window and why is it important? And then just a year or two ago, you wrote three reasons why the 1040 window is still relevant. And our head producer, Andrew, said, let's do a podcast on this. And we hadn't actually done one. We've talked about it in the past. It's come up as a term, but we want to dive a little deeper into that. And you have done some research on it, and you've been there.
Yeah, let's take it out of the abstract and make it concrete in people's minds. This is a real place.
Yeah.
A real area of the world.
We'll talk. I brought a globe because for those of you that don't know, the 1040 window, it refers to a region on the world, on a map or on a globe. So if you have a globe, you might want to go grab that, hit pause and go grab it. Or if you have a map of the world, that's a helpful thing too. If you're driving, don't do either of those things. You can imagine along with us. But I thought it'd be important because, you know, when you say the 1040 window, it's like, oh, it has something to do with those lines.
Yes.
Those
yes,
lines
it does have
on the
to do
globe.
With those lines.
So when someone says, well, what is it? What's the way you like to describe it?
Well, the technical definition is it's an area of the world from 10 to 40 degrees north latitude that starts off the coast of northern Africa and ends on the east, just east of Japan, and goes from Central Africa all the way up into northern China. But when I look at it on the map and I think about this region of the world, I think about places that I've been in this region and how little access there is to the gospel in those areas, and why, even though this is only about one-third of the space in the world, it's about two-thirds of the world's population live there. There's a lot of people in this window, and most of them are in unreached people groups or in areas with very little access to the gospel.
Right. So if I've got my globe here, so I'm going to spin it, and I'm going to have, I basically have kind of India
India and Saudi Arabia facing me. And so I'm going to put my hand, my left hand, it's out here off the coast of Africa, mm-hmm. above the equator. And my other hand is, my right hand's out here, Japan and including the Philippines. And so I look across the globe and I've got basically all of North Africa, Algeria, Libya, Egypt, Sudan. I've got Turkey. I've got Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, all the stands.
Mm-hmm.
I've got India. China's in there. Uzbekistan, Myanmar, Burma, Thailand, Laos, Vietnam, North Korea. I mean, you talk about those regions. You're talking, one, not only very populous regions. I mean, you say India. India, probably the most densely populated country in the world, if I'm not mistaken. But also countries that Christianity may have had an influence in the past, but currently does not play a major role religiously in this part of the world.
Right. This part of the world is where the predominant religions of Buddhism, Islam, and Hinduism have their core. This is the home countries, the home area of those religions. And they predominate. And in those countries, in the 1040 window, there is little, if any, separation between those religions and the state. And so there's a great deal of support for those religions from the governments in those countries, and there's a great deal of opposition to Christianity in those countries, both politically and culturally.
Right. So, Eric, before we go a little bit farther, I thought, along with what is the 1040 window, we should explain where that term came from, because it's not a biblical term,
no.
But it's a way to describe the region of the world where a lot of these attributes that you've been talking about, where they exist. And because they exist in a certain region, someone came up with a term and said, this is an easy way to refer to this region.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
And that came from Lewis and Doris Bush. Lewis is one of the primary missiologists or mission experts in the world today. And back in the 2000s, he and his wife moved to Central Virginia. They lived in Bedford County, Virginia, and they attended my local church. And we got to be very good friends. He was there for a couple of years, and he told me the story of this. He has been credited with coming up with a 1040 window going all the way back into the 80s or even earlier. But the interesting fact is that he wanted to call it the 1040 box. And his wife said that no,
didn't have the right
ring to it. And so Doris said, let's call it a window, because a window is a symbol of opportunity. You can look through the window and see the opportunities out there. So let's call it the 1040 window, because when you focus through that window, you can see the greatest needs and the least access in the world to the gospel.
So the term this couple came up with was, they were looking at it from God's heart. Like, I have people here that are mine, and let's find a way to describe that to the greater Christian community, the kingdom, and say, this part of the world has an opportunity, and we're going to call it the 1040 window so that you can picture where that opportunity is.
Yeah, you can see that in front of you. And the beauty of it is it's important strategically and tactically and every other way, because it says, let's look where the opportunities and the need is the greatest. Let's look at where the access is the least. Now, that doesn't mean that needs and access or lack of access and the great need doesn't occur everywhere else in the world. It does. We know that here at A&M, because we have regional directors for every part of the world, and every part of the world has great need and pockets of places that have very little access to the gospel. But when you look at this window, you see the greatest need of the greatest number of people with the least access to the gospel.
And the 1040 window is a simple way to define that region.
Right.
Yeah, if you look, there's other maps on other websites that pinpoint and will highlight in colors, like how many unreached people groups or concentration of churches or developed Christian communities. And when you look at those maps of the world that are pinned or color-coded, you don't see a window. You don't see a rectangle. Those dots don't, the pins and regions don't make a rectangle. But if you look at a concentration, and I would say, you know, squint your eyes, either look for the red or you look for the most pins, then you can start to say, you know what, if I drew that window, if I drew that box from west of Africa to over by Japan, and I drew it north of the equator between 10 and 40 degrees latitude, there's a lot of pins there.
And there's a lot of people groups. It's an enormous area. Like I said, it represents two-thirds of the world's population live in that window, even though that window is only one-third of the world's land area.
So one way to maybe, as I'm talking with you, I'm thinking one way to think about it is just to say, okay, well, let's consider America, and let's contrast America, which is not in the 1040 window, to, say, Afghanistan, which is in the 1040 window,
yes.
and go, okay, in terms of the gospel, and in terms of Christianity and the church, contrast and compare, like what's available in America, what's not available in Afghanistan, what's available or what has happened in America, what has not happened in Afghanistan.
You know, I run into this a lot when I speak, and people say, well, don't we have great need right here in the United States? Don't we have so many unevangelized people that are not believers and need to hear the gospel? And then, yes, we do. But that has to do with the word need. But the word I want to focus on is access. You know, Americans have access to the gospel in every conceivable way, except for certain pockets of our cultures. There's a church on almost every corner of most of our cities. If you go into the 1040 window, let's say you go into northern Iraq or you go into Egypt, you're going to see a mosque on every corner practically. If you go into Myanmar, where I have wonderful friends and long relationships, you're going to see some kind of Buddhist stupa or temple everywhere you go, you see them. And if you go into India or Nepal, you're going to see Hindu temples everywhere and not that many churches except in some places. And so in the way that we look around and we don't even see all those churches because they're just ubiquitous, there they are. And we don't think about that. But if you were to be dropped down in the middle of rural India, that's not something you would see. And except in a few places, you will see Hindu temples everywhere, just in the same way that we see churches here. You'll see the Buddhist places of worship. You'll see mosques in the Muslim world everywhere. And it's a shock to you when you go there and you're not prepared for that. You're not prepared for that. I have this one experience of being in northern Iraq, in the Kurdish region of northern Iraq. And we just got there, and we're in this hotel. And I wake up early in the morning because jet lag is a terrible, horrible thing. And at about 5 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden, the mosques start the call to prayer. And there are hundreds of mosques in the city that we were in. And one starts up, and another starts up, and another starts up after that. And they're not synchronized in any way. And it's just this cacophony of a call to Islamic worship. And that's not something that you're likely going to hear except in certain parts of the United States. There are places where you can hear that in the New York area and other places or in parts of Michigan. But the impact of that when you're there is like, my goodness, this country, this is the religion of this part of the world. And the number of Christians here is very small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when we talk about the Bushes and why they coined the term. Mm-hmm. And we talk about, well, why is this important? We're not talking about, well, it's all about geography or it's about the political system or it's mm-hmm. about the culture or it's about they wake their people up early, too early to the call of worship. Those are the heart of the term and the heart of why the 1040 window is important is because of the people that are
yes.
there.
Yes.
And people that need to hear the gospel.
Right, and they're not going to hear it unless there's a concerted effort to bring the gospel into an unreached area, to an unreached people group. It's not just going to happen. They can't just turn on the radio and listen. They can't just turn on their television and watch a program. In some places, it's very difficult to even meet a Christian. I've heard many testimonies, especially in the Islamic world, of people who heard about Jesus, but they don't know who to ask. They've never met a Christian in their life, and they don't know where to go to ask questions. And God somehow sends them a Christian who comes across their path, and they find out this person is a follower of Jesus, and they go, "Can I ask you some questions?" It's amazing. There's nowhere for them to get those answers. You have to understand that. We have access to so much information here in the United States. Access is not an issue for us. That it's just not an issue, but it's an issue for so many people in so many different ethnic groups in so many countries around the world.
So as you're talking about someone who hears about Jesus, but they don't know who to go to, they don't know what a Bible is, or that's God's word to us. They don't have any of that. And so where do they go? I was thinking, you know, the 1040 window is a term that it's aimed at the church. It's aimed at the believer and said, you need to understand this term so that you, as someone who has the word of God, as someone who has Christ, where's a place I can go to share that? Well, the 1040 window is a way to describe, like, this is where the gospel needs to go.
Yeah, and part of it is helping the church in the United States understand where to invest, because this is a strategic thing. Louis Bush is a mission strategist. He talks about how do we get the gospel into this culture or that culture or this language group or that. And so all of this is designed, the 1040 window is designed to say to American churches and American Christians, here is a place to focus your investment in prayer, in giving, and possibly even in some kind of vision trip or going in those areas of the world. We have people from my local church who are working in North Africa. But they're working with local believers to generate certain types of information that they need to evangelize their neighbors. We have people that work in many different areas of the world. But the point is, the church in the United States needs to understand that most of our mission giving is focused on areas of the world that have been reached with the gospel and where local believers are perfectly capable of evangelizing their own people. But we continue to go there because we've always gone there. But less than 5%, far less than 5% of American church giving and mission giving goes to areas of the world where there's little or no access, and it's an imbalance. And somebody like Louise Bush would say, we're investing, we should not stop investing here, we should start investing in these areas. We should invest our people, we should invest our prayers, we should invest our funds in reaching people for Jesus Christ in these areas of the world, because not just that they need it, but that they can't get to it unless Christians go there, local, and especially native Christians, and share the gospel with people in these unreached people groups.
I'm glad you joined me for this conversation about the 1040 window. I want to take a short break here and talk about how churches like yours are getting involved in missions through A&M. I spoke with Mindy Mullins, Assistant Director of Church Relations here at Advancing Native Missions. She shared the story of how one U.S. church was changed after they took a small step to offer help to people caught by the war in Ukraine.
So a church came to us during the time that the Ukraine was having its war, the beginning of it, and asked if we had anybody working in Ukraine and wanted to know information. They just emailed us, and so we contacted them, I think had a Zoom call and answered some of their questions, and they said, okay, great. We would love to do that. So if you could send us this, this, and this, and we're going to present it to our church. And we said, wonderful. Thank you so much. So they were, I guess, taking it to their church, and my husband and I were actually in their area, and we reached out and said, hey, we just like to meet you because we've never met you and just wanted to say thank you so much for doing what you're doing for the Ukraine. And so we had lunch with them, and they were just excited because they had presented their church, you know, like maybe I don't remember the exact number, but just a couple thousand dollars. They just thought, oh, wow, if we could raise that, that would be amazing. And they said, what's so funny is that we're close to like $8,000 or $9,000 already. And so we just didn't want to send you a check and have to send you another check. So we're just blown away that our church's response. And then later on, you know, what was so exciting, they said, but why this is so exciting to us is because our church has not done anything in missions in a decade. And we didn't even know that they would care, you know, to help people in the Ukraine. And their overwhelming response has overwhelmed us. You know, our church has got new life from this. The fact that we're giving them opportunities to think beyond our walls, just the response was it met a need that we didn't even know existed. And so she said, but as we were having lunch, she said, the check will be there in like a week or two. I said, okay, great. Thank you so much. And we'll get you report and all the things. And, but then in a couple of weeks, it didn't come. And then a week or two later, I got an email from her. She said, I'm so sorry. The money kept coming in and we didn't want to send you a check. So now it's over $10,000. And so we are going to close it and we are going to send it. She's like, but we're just overwhelmed at the way our church has responded to this. And so it was so wonderful to see a church that had been kind of dormant in missions be excited to help do something beyond their walls, beyond their own community, and to see how big God is and that they could be a part of what God was doing in the Ukraine. And then we were able to connect with them, with our partner actually in the Ukraine and our regional director, with their leadership. And they were able to have a Zoom call and to be able to share that with their church. And they said that just made it even better. They got to meet the native missionary. And so they have continued to do some supporting and we look forward to seeing what God has next with them and how they can continue to build on this. But again, it's just been so thrilling to be a part of God kind of rebirthing in this church a new heart for his bigger visions. You know, our heart is to support Native missions around the world, but my husband and I definitely have a heart for the American church to realize that God is a big God and he's working here, he's working there, and we can be a part of it. And so when churches take out steps like this church did, just to see if their church would connect with it and if they would respond, they took one step and God said, no, we're going to make a big leap. And that was exciting. And revival started to happen. And later on, they started to think about even their name of their church changed because they wanted to be more community-minded and more missional-minded. And it's just been exciting to see the journey that this church is on, and it's reviving the church, all because their missions leader said, let's see what we can do and how we can be a part of what God's doing around the world.
Now, let's get back to the interview. So, you obviously have a very close, intimate experience with the people who coined the term, knowing them. You've traveled to several places, countries, and know people inside the 1040 window and ministry partners, many of them who are our ministry partners here at Advancing Native Missions, who are reaching out to others with the gospel in the 1040 window. Talk about some of those people, some of the ways some of those partners are sharing the gospel inside of this place where there is limited access and what that looks like.
Well, my very first mission trip was not to the 1040 window. My very first mission trip when I was about 39 years old was to Brazil. But a few years later in 1994, our church decided to invest in the 1040 window. And so we took several of our elders and one of our pastors and another mission organization, and we went to India and Nepal. And I still remember landing in India for the very first time and just being overwhelmed by the sights and the scents and the Hindu temples. And it was just overwhelming to me. And of course, we were met by Christians. There are Christian churches in the south of India has a lot of churches, but not compared to the number of Hindu temples. And we built some churches there. We helped work in that area. And then in the last few days of that first mission trip in 1994 to that part of the world, we went to Nepal. And I lost my heart to that country. And I have friends today that I met on that trip. And some of them are partners of Advancing Native Missions. I think of a man named Chandra, who is just one of my dearest, closest friends in Nepal. I met him on that very first trip in 1994. And he, and like so many others there, of our partners in Nepal, and we have a number of partners there, they're constantly training church planters and evangelists and pastors to go out to unreached people groups in the country. Now, the church has grown very quickly in Nepal, but Nepal is still, as a country, an unreached country, and there are many people groups in Nepal that are still unreached with the gospel. And so even though the work has multiplied over and over again over, say, the last 25 or 30 years, that doesn't mean that we can just sit back and say, okay, that's taken care of. It's not taken care of. The people have to go out every day and share the gospel in a predominantly Hindu country. After Hinduism, there's Buddhism, and after Buddhism, there's Islam, and then after that, there's Christians. And I've been going there since 1994. I have very dear friends there. But when I think of Nepal, I think of people in villages who have no access to health care, they have little access to education, and they certainly don't have access to the gospel.
So in practical ways, how does that change? What does partnership with the ministry, what does your and your church's partnership with the ministry, what does that look like for you and for your church to partner, and what have you seen change?
Well, we started partnering in 1994. One of the first things we did to see if we could jumpstart some work among unreached people groups is that we sponsored for 3 years. We sponsored up to 35 native missionaries to go into all parts of Nepal and establish churches and preach the gospel. And the results of that were hundreds of new churches and thousands of new believers. It came about because of that two 3-year projects that ended up going through around 2001 or so. Then we continued the relationship with several partners in Nepal to keep up that work. Now, Nepal has gone through political upheaval. They've gone through all kinds of situations that have made it difficult and then easier and then more difficult again for local native missionaries to share the gospel. But we have maintained that relationship over these many years, because we don't believe in just parachuting in to a certain part of the world and doing a 1-year project and then going somewhere else. We do a lot of things at our church, but we partner with Advancing Native Missions in Myanmar. We partner in Nepal. And it's because we believe in this truth that people don't have the access to the gospel that they need. And we need to support native missionaries who are doing this because they do it better than anybody else. Now, we, as a church, our local church sponsors missionaries, American missionaries that do certain things in Europe and other places. But by and large, as we grow our mission program at our church, we're looking to partner with Advancing Native Missions so that we work more and more with native missionaries who have that access. They have the access that we don't, to bring the gospel to people who don't have access to the gospel. So it's a perfect collaboration. You need to look at the world in terms of not just need but access, and then you need to look at the resources as native missionaries versus sent missionaries, not versus, but as a focus on native missionaries who can really do the job better than anybody else. And so we've just maintained a long-term relationship in Nepal. We've maintained a long-term relationship in Myanmar, and we've done this through Advancing Native Missions.
How has your partnership and your friendship, how has that changed over time? How has it grown? How has it matured or shifted? Describe maybe some of your first thoughts, those first years, and then over time as you keep returning, have you seen?
I have a vivid memory of that first trip to Nepal in 1994. I was taken with the beauty of the mountains, but I was also taken by the need for of access to the gospel for people. Even those who live just outside the major city of Kathmandu, there were villages out there where native missionaries were going to plant churches. Those people had never heard about Jesus Christ, and they're living within a few miles of a major city in the world where there are quite a few churches, but it takes people to go there. And so that's why we began to partner with native missionaries and mission organizations inside of Nepal to reach Nepalis with the gospel. And that was starting in 1994. Now, I haven't been back every single year, but I've been there at least 20, 25 times. I was there last spring for a series of what we call Operation Barnabas Pastors Encouragement Conferences. I'm hoping to go back again in August of this year. And my relationship there has kind of turned into one of a an elder friend of the Nepali church. And so I go to teach and to encourage young pastors and my friends who are missionary partners there. It started out mainly as a big adventure, okay? The first time I went to Kathmandu, I thought that was the most exotic place in the world I'd ever been to. Now when I land in Kathmandu, I think, I'm home. It just feels perfectly normal to me because I have so many friends here. Through the years, my relationship has grown. I'll give you one example. After 5 years of partnership in Nepal, it's 1999, and I'm sitting in Chandra's home with a pastor, and we're discussing the relationship that our church has or had at that time with that pastor in that church. And as an American, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, these last 5 years have been so productive. I mean, it's amazing. We're good friends. There's so much being accomplished by our relationship and our partnership. And the pastor looks at me and he says, Eric, we've been watching you and we've been watching your church now for 5 years. And we think we can trust you. And that just knocked me over. The difference in the way in which Native missionaries look at the relationship and the way we looked at the relationship was very, very different. And I learned something that day about long-term relationships, the value of staying it out long-term with our partners and sticking it out through thick and thin, and whatever happens, you stick with them and you keep going. And then you modify what you do so that it meets their needs. And it's not what you want to do, it's what they need to do. But that was a turning point for me in 1999 to understand things from the point of view of the Native missionary. We think we can trust you. That was just an amazing statement. But I learned a lot from that, and I think it's been valuable to me ever since.
Well, as you were sharing that last part, my thoughts went to a couple of terms, and maybe a way to describe it is that I think when we talk about the 1040 window, we talk about missions in general, I think you can get off in the weeds in a couple places. And I think one direction you can go is massive guilt. It's just a big guilt trip. Like, we have the gospel, they don't.
Yeah.
You should feel really guilty that you're not out there sharing it. And I'd say there's responsibility, but like putting a guilt trip on the Christian church is not that guilt is never a great reason. It can be a motivator, but it's not a good one. I think the other one is I'll just say wearing the cape. That we're the superheroes and we're going to swoop in with our Christianity and save the 1040 window with our, you know, you can call it your Western Christianity, you can call it your American, whatever it is. I think those are errors in seeing the need and the lack of the gospel. And so now that I see the 1040 window and I know what it represents, what do I do with that? And What's a healthy God-honoring response to get involved with the people there?
Well, up until 1999, I pretty much thought in a typical Western way, which is, here we come to save the day. You know, I'm old enough to remember the Mighty Mouse cartoon on television where here I come to save the day. And had that typical idea of we ride in with our large amount of resources and our vast knowledge of church history, and we're here to save the day for the locals. And, you know, that's not the way it's done. You're absolutely right. I had to recognize the strengths and resources that Native missionaries have that we do not have. They know their cultures, and they know their areas. And these Native missionaries inside the 1040 window, they know exactly what they need to do to reach those places and those people groups with the gospel. And our job is to walk alongside them and help them to do that inside the 1040 window. The important thing about the 1040 window, again, is that this is where not only the need is the greatest, but the access is the least. And therefore, when we work with Native missionaries within these regions, we have to pay attention to what they know, what they understand, how well they understand their own work in their own region and their own situations, and adapt to that, adapt to how we can help them do what God has called them to do, and not co-opt them to help us accomplish what we think we should be doing. It's just a completely different way of looking at it. And if you just get dropped down inside the 1040 window, you can see this so clearly. If you get dropped down in the middle of Myanmar, okay, we'll just go there for a while because my relationship there goes back to 2000. And you're in the middle of this Buddhist country, which is currently ruled by a dictatorship, and there you are, and you don't speak Burmese, and you think that maybe I could learn Burmese, but it might take me 5 years to really, really learn it. And you think, how in the world am I ever going to accomplish anything in this country? Now, there are Western missionaries that have accomplished things inside Myanmar. I'm not saying they can't do it and they don't do it. I'm just saying, once you experience being in this part, in these parts of the world, you realize how massive the resistance is to the gospel. It's just massive. It's not just that people don't believe. It's that they believe in systems that are absolutely antithetical to the gospel. And they live their entire lives within that system. And everything about the culture, even the government, is designed to promote that and enhance that and support that. And here you come, you know, with your gospel and your Bible and your faith, and you go, how am I supposed to deal with this massive, massive resistance to the gospel? And I just think that when you visit these areas, if you have the opportunity to visit these areas in the presence or in the company of Native missionaries, you can go, now I know what I need to do. I need to work with them because they understand this. They understand what it takes. They understand how difficult it is. And just coming in with a lot of good ideas doesn't really help the situation at all. They have plenty of ideas.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about some partners that we have in the Middle East.
Yes.
And the whole dynamic of Muslim background believers and their understanding of what it's like to live mm-hmm. in that Muslim-dominated culture, into that system, that religious and legal system, and when you come out of it, what that looks like, mm-hmm. and what, because they've lived through the, you know, being shunned by their family or potentially threatened, their life threatened, all the needs that are specific to that particular part of the world and what it costs someone to become a believer, and then what the church in that area looks like to take someone and nurture them, as opposed to, okay, well, let's jump to another culture where that's not the same, say, you know, North Korea, which is similar, but a whole different religious system or non-religious system, however you want to.
Oh, they have a religious
however
system.
However you want to view
they worship the
yes.
leaders.
Yes, and no. So how do you support the believers in
yes.
that part of the world or in Myanmar? And, or, okay, there's these people, but they're in the city. And then at least I'll do this. I'll group and say, well, okay, Myanmar. But it's like, well, where are you in Myanmar? Are you in the north? Are mm-hmm. you in the middle?
Are you in the south?
You know, are you in the triangle? Like, where are you?
And which people group are you with? Which tribe group
That's
are
right.
you with? Which language do they speak?
So you, I will say this, I will tend to generalize and I will tend to oversimplify mm-hmm. a very complex, very region-specific situation mm-hmm. that a local partner ministry, of which we have several in those countries, can say, I live there. I know the family that came to Christ two generations ago, and they're the ones that we want to partner with. Or I know there's no one there, but I know someone in this other city who has been praying about going. And so if we just lend him a hand, and he doesn't want a car, he wants this kind of motorcycle.
Yes.
Or they don't want a church building. They want to have the facilities to do a house church. Or they need, they want to start a school because a school is, and reaching the kids, that's the way to do this. Or no, we don't want to start a school because that'll be trouble, but we want to do, like they have an idea about what inroad and what path God's laid on their heart to reach their people. And when we as a church with our relationship and we bring things to the partnership, we can come alongside them and say, okay, how can we work with you? What can we do to help you to reach this group? And it becomes not so much, okay, we got to just check this region off our list and get this taken care of. It's more like, let's go in there, let's find out what God's doing, and then partner with them.
Right.
Was it Henry Blackaby's phrase, like find out what God's doing
and join him there.
And then join him there.
That's right.
And
that's what we're doing. I mean, it's interesting. There are approximately 70 countries in the 1040 window. And the last time we actually took a count, A&M partners were actively ministering to unreached people groups in 40 of those countries, and that was several years ago. I expect that the number is much higher than that today. So the fact that our partners are working in more than 40 countries in the 1040 window means that God has given us a unique opportunity to see the unique possibilities within the 1040 window, because we have partners working, native missionary partners that are working in those areas who know what to do in those areas, in Muslim areas, in Buddhist areas, in Hindu areas, and others as well. But to me, it's just amazing to have that kind of reach where our partners are in all of these countries and working to spread the gospel and to plant churches, and we have the great privilege of partnering with them to do that and asking American churches and American donors and Americans to help us do that. To me, that's really my heart, because whenever we talk about this, we can get too deep in the weeds into strategies and all kinds of things like that. But what keeps me going is that verse from Revelation chapter 7. And, you know, I anchor my entire passion about missions, native missions, and the 1040 window in Revelation 7, 9, and 10, where John the apostle looks and he sees this multitude that no one can number. That just meditating on that just blows my mind, how, you know, that you see a multitude and it can't be numbered, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, and they're clothed in white robes with palm branches in their hands, and they're crying out with a loud voice, "Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb." And when I read something like that, I ask myself, how did they get there? Because so many of these peoples, these nations, tribes, peoples, and languages are from the 1040 window, and they don't have that much access to the gospel. How did they get there? Because John sees it. And if John sees it, and the book of Revelation tells us that that's going to be true, then it's going to happen. And so the question is, how does God do that? And he does it. Right now, he's doing it through native missionaries working in the 1040 window to bring these groups in. I remember being one time I visited Bangladesh, and the majority people group in the Bangladesh are the Sheikh people. And it's one of the largest unreached people groups in the world, and it's the majority people group in the country. It's not a minority group somewhere stuck off somewhere in Bangladesh. It's the majority people group in the country, the Sheikh, and they're a completely unreached people group. And it's like, it blows my mind when I see this, when I visit these areas of the world and I see this need. And I think about the access, and it's verses like this in Revelation that continue to encourage me and direct me to say, what we're doing in the 1040 window, what our Native missionary partners are doing in the 1040 window is actually helping to fulfill this scripture. And that's why I don't get discouraged, because it's very easy to get discouraged, because there's, like I said, there's this massive, massive resistance to the gospel and to Christians and to the churches in those areas of the world. Our partners come back here and tell us these stories all the time, and they're heartbreaking stories, and yet they remain faithful.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for bringing up the scriptures and you know, God's heart. It's God's heart for the nations that drives missions. And, you know, Christ's words to go and make disciples. And maybe a way to start to bring this to a close, or to sort of wrap things up and bring them together, is to say God's got a heart for people all over the world. God's got people in the 1040 window who have a heart for their own people.
Yes.
And many of those people are waiting for someone to come alongside them and say, help me reach this group. Help me reach my neighbors. Help me reach my friends with the gospel. And sometimes, well, I know that in many cases, because you and I have both heard them say that they want, what's most important to them is not necessarily the money, not necessarily the, like, I need this thing or that thing. What they value is that they know somebody in America prays for them. Somebody in America knows who they are.
We're with them.
They care about them. Yes.
Yeah.
They care about them and what they're doing, and that fellowship.
Knowing that they're not alone, that they're not forgotten, that somebody is with them, and that, you know, when we get to visit them on the field, people say, well, why do you have to go over there and visit them? I mean, you've got email now. Everybody's got a cell phone in the world. That's true. But that's not the same thing. They want to, when you show up with a Native missionary, especially in the 1040 window, and they say, you cared enough for us to spend the money to come here to be with us. It's not about what you accomplish while you're here. It's the fact that you came here to be with us in this place. And we are grateful for that, because that encourages us. And the more isolated and the more pressure there is, like in the 1040 window, the more they appreciate that, because everything in their culture is against them. Everything in Nepali culture, for instance, militates against the gospel, against the church, against Christianity. And it's hard to stand up against that. It's extremely discouraging. And yet we stand with them. So like you said, it's not just about the money. It's about the fact that we're with them in this struggle. And the struggle is so great. I mean, it's great everywhere. But in the 1040 window, there's just focus. And one other thing about the 1040 window, I think people may forget, is that the whole history of the people of Israel and the whole history of the work of Jesus Christ on this earth all took place in that region. The entire advancement of the church into the Gentile world took place within this region. The earliest centers of Christianity were all in North Africa and the Middle East. Can you imagine that? All areas, strongholds of Islam now, used to be the centers of Christianity. It wasn't in Rome. It was in Jerusalem. It was in Alexandria, Egypt. It was in Baghdad. It was in Syria. It was in Constantinople. It was in what is today Turkey. Those were the centers of Christianity. And they were all in the 1040, what we call the 1040 window. And so in some cases, I think what we're doing when we focus on the 1040 window, it's saying we need to go back to where the centers of Christianity began in those areas of the world. And I think God honors that, because he is still the God of the whole earth. He's not just the God of Christians. He's not just the God of Americans. He's not just the God of people who look like me. He's the God of the whole earth. And these areas belong to him. And Native missionaries are winning them back one person and one church in one area, one tribe at a time. And that, to me, that's the value of the 1040 window. Focus, focus, focus on where the need is the greatest and the access is the least.
Well, I can, you know, it's certainly clear to me, and I hope it's coming through to our listeners, that you have a passion for this. You have a passion for God's kingdom. You have a passion for the people that you know in the 1040 window. And maybe that's a good thought to leave with, is that when people think 1040 window, that you said it early on, that the wife wanted it to see as a window of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a window of opportunity for us to partner with God. God's giving us the opportunity to go, I get a chance to be a part of what God's doing, and I get to step into a relationship by partnering with people who are reaching out, and that I can get a taste of God's heart by doing that, and that, you know, he doesn't expect any of us to do more than what he puts in our hands, but he expects us to offer what he's given us, to be good stewards of it, and to offer it to others. You know, the gospel itself, in its simplest form, is like what we've been given, we share and we pass on, and to pass it on to those in the 1040 window and to partner with others who are doing it is a privilege. Mm-hmm. It's a privilege to do that. So, any final thoughts, Eric?
The final thought I would say is that we have focused a great deal. The whole point of this particular podcast is about the 1040 window, and I think it should be. But I want everybody to know that Advancing Native Missions has regional directors for every region of the world. And in every region of the world, including North America, there are unreached people groups everywhere. And there are people who are unevangelized. There are people who haven't heard the gospel. I know that our Latin America director, Renee, talks about the fact that there's so many indigenous groups in Latin America that are definitely unreached people groups. So we're not saying that the only unreached people groups in the world are in the 1040 window. We're just saying that most of them are there. And it makes sense from a strategic point of view and a prayer point of view to focus there without ignoring the other. I think about, it's out of context, but Jesus in one situation said, you should have done this, but not neglected the other. And that's the way I think about it. It's like, you should focus here, but you don't neglect the other as well. You don't neglect all of these places in the world where we have partners, we have Native missionary partners that are reaching out, and that every region of the world has unreached people groups, even Europe, even the United States, Latin America. There are places, Europe, many places in Europe that are unreached with the gospel. But the point of the 1040 window is simply to focus. And I think that's a hard thing for us as Americans. It's hard for us to focus. We're so scattered. There's so many things going on, so many things distracting us and calling for our attention, that a simple picture like the 1040 window helps us to focus.
Well, thanks so much for joining me here in the studio today, Eric. Appreciate your heart for missions and your experience in this part of the world, and a chance to explain and elaborate a little bit more on the 1040 window and what that means. And again, listeners can look at those articles, and maybe we'll be up here again for another topic.
Thank you, Joel. I really enjoyed it.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Native Missions Podcast, please leave us a rating. It helps other listeners find us. If you take a moment to do that, I'd appreciate it. And if you want more information about how to pray for missions in the 1040 window, we have a free prayer guide available. It's called How to Pray for the 1040 Window. Just visit advancingnativemissions.com/pray to download a copy. And I hope you'll join me again on the next episode for more missions insight and inspiration. I'm your host, Joel Moss. Thanks for listening.